The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, international matches. Worst Wales performance since Free Willy 3, while England win means more crap-filled newspapers than a tramp's trousers. The captaincy controversy. Wayne's yellow card. The fun doesn't stop. And Ghana are up next. We have a full international roundup. We discuss why traps much better than cat. There's the Romadal volley, the booze for Emra, and the matter of Motta. We dial up Sid in Spain, get the latest from the Football League, hear about goal-scoring keepers, hear your posts, and the Guardian's very own Opta Sports quiz, Shane. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Yes, hello. In the pod today, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Barney Roney.
Hello.
Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And a little bit later on, James Dart. You'll say hello later on. Item one, a small chunk posts in saying, I'm 30, this is the least interest I've ever had in England. Anyone else?
The whole country or the football
team? He didn't specify. I'm going with football.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's very much his point. Barney, you went to the boat race instead.
Yeah, I watched the game as well. It was largely a meaningless exercise other than England have got 3 points. I mean, England beat Wales, and there's not really anything you can draw from that.
Jacob, draw something from it.
Scott Parker was very good.
Right.
Ashley Young was very good.
Yep.
Jack Wilsh was very good, and England tend to beat these teams.
This 4-3-3, it's an exciting formation, huh?
Yeah, you're going to make me be Michael Cox now.
But it's interesting to see some tactical flexibility.
Yeah, well, maybe they could have done that in the World Cup, but they would have had to pick some different players as well.
Mm.
It worked, but then they have better players than Wales do. And everyone was talking about the pressing and how they made Wales lose the ball so much. That's because Wales aren't very good.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, it's a bit like the way Barcelona... I mean, England are Barcelona to Wales is Arsenal in this equation. If you're slightly better at controlling the ball than the other team, you can... I mean, when I play against my six-year-old son, my pressing game's just too much for him. I'm all over him. He's not got a chance. He can't live with me. He literally can't live with my pressing game. The court's... if I were to try my pressing game on someone who was slightly better than me at football, i.e. any other adult male, it probably wouldn't work as well. And it's a similar dynamic with England. We've tried this pressing game for quite a long time. We tried it at the World Cup, but it doesn't really work if the other team don't give you the ball back the whole time.
What you're saying is the qualifiers are effectively back garden football with toddlers. And the tournaments very much represent a move to kind of, say, Sunday League with equivalent adult figures. And that's where the problem lies. Interesting. Some other negatives we could throw at this victory for England, which puts them back level with Montenegro on the top of their qualifying group.
Why do you want to be negative? Why can't you be positive? Why can't you accept that balance? England are quite clearly, on all evidence available, going to win Euro 2012.
I think they're fourth favourites,
yeah.
Fourth favourites.
What do the bookies know?
Yeah.
Spain are favourites, and then Germany and Holland. I don't know what order.
An interesting France, who I think are also having a similarly brilliant build-up.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, France, Portugal. I mean, who else would win it before? Probably a couple of Scandinavian teams.
All right. The negatives being that I have prepared a little list here. One, we can't play Wales every week. Two, Rooney's yellow card, which rules him out of the game against Switzerland.
Well, it's all Capello's fault, isn't it? Because he didn't tell him not to get booked.
Right.
Because if you don't get told, it's compulsory. You have to get booked.
You're poo-pooing the theory that the manager should have perhaps reminded Wayne, given Wayne's...
No, the manager should definitely have reminded him. He knows that Wayne Rooney is not going to know that. He's going to be charging around.
If he told him, he still would have done it anyway.
Well, at least he could have told him. He'd say, I told him when the press asked him the question, and then he wouldn't look like an idiot.
He could have rung Stephen Gerrard and asked Stephen Gerrard to tell him. That's a topical reference to the fact that Capello rang Stephen Gerrard to let Stephen Gerrard know that Rio, who Capello wasn't calling, was no longer the England captain.
James, did you get a call about any of this? Because I didn't get a call either. I had no idea. I had to read about it in the press.
I know. It's a shame, because if there's anyone who's interested in the England captaincy, it's me. Yes.
It's sort of indicative of how little interest there is in international football, that all this non-news about who got phoned by who and when, who told who what about what they should or shouldn't pick up during a game. It's just thousands and thousands of words being written about it. And it's just so pointless and boring. And there are conspiracy theories doing the rounds that Wayne Rooney got booked on purpose so wouldn't have to play in the game against Switzerland, and that meant, you know, he'd have a clear summer to go and lie on the beach. I'm very sure England have it about them to beat Switzerland without Wayne Rooney's help, particularly as he's more of a hindrance than a help at the moment. And what was the other thing?
While you're thinking of that, here's some talking points ahead of the next international game. Ghana, one, after all that fuss over the armband, John Terry's not even needed for this big game at Wembley.
Matt Jarvis will be captain, won't he? Eventually. They'll pass it round five times.
Who is it going to be? Is it Mr. Gareth Barry?
Gareth Barry or
Scott Parker's another one.
Will Steven Gerrard be back for the game?
Oh, look, stop it. We're talking about the armband. Stop it, Barry.
Ben Rook says, what kind of example is it to controversially name a captain then excuse him from playing? That certainly is one talking point. Here's another one. Looky here, it's Mourinho. That's quite a coincidence, him popping up today, Barney.
Well, his comments about being the man who England initially wanted to have as their manager, it's no surprise. Every year he has a go at Capello. There's a feud between the pair of them. Last year he said Fabio Capello knows nothing about football, which is quite funny because he must know a few things. And he's had a go at him about the way they've got a Madrid connection, and you know, if you talk to the players here, they'll tell you he can't manage. It's his comments are clearly a mischievous dig at Fabio Capello.
I was hours away from being England manager in 2007, says Jose Mourinho. Arif Budirwanta says, and 120 minutes from going to Athens. Which is
I think all of us are just hours Chelsea away from being England manager, aren't we? I mean,
Chelsea,
how long
Champions
does it take?
League, I think.
You're England manager.
I am now.
Yeah,
right.
Now.
All right, brilliant.
What's this? Is this a hype? Are we playing role playing?
You can be captain.
Oh, thanks. Can I be captain forever?
Here's my third talking point. What about Ghana? They're just coming off a big 3-0 win away to Congo and are looking well-placed to qualify for the Africa Cup of Nations, as are the Ivory Coast, with two goals from Didier Drogba. Nigeria and Zambia also winning at the weekend. Do you think that Ghana could become the first African team to win at Wembley?
Yes.
Thank you, Jacob.
Because they're playing a reserve side.
They might be playing their own reserve side.
I appreciate, James, your attempts to big up
I'm interested in
lamentably uninteresting fixture.
Really? Yeah.
But
why?
It's an England reserve team.
Yeah.
Ghana have a 9-hour flight from Congo, where they played on Sunday.
Yep.
So we'll probably be jet lagged and equally uninterested in the game. Although I do believe the Ghanaian media have been bigging this up as a huge, huge match, and are more interested in beating England at Wembley than they are, or they were, in beating Congo. Yeah, I very much doubt the players will be similarly enthused.
It's an exhibition match, isn't it? It's friendlies are only meaningful if you're going to be trying to build your team, but we're going to have possibly 11 changes. Yeah. It means nothing.
The one thing that is interesting about it is that Ghana are, I think, 11-2 to win the game, which is an astonishingly big price. Because if they're up for it, I'd imagine they'd win easily.
So you're saying that's a very inviting price for anyone to
I think,
on
yeah,
Ghana.
The Ghana are over 5-1 in a three-horse race. They can win, they can lose, they can draw. And I think if they are trying, they should win easy.
Right. So your tip is bet on Ghana?
Well, my tip would be...
They have lots of Sunderland players, Barry.
They do. Sully Montari, Asmo Juan, John Mentz is the captain. I'm not tipping anyone to bet on them because, personally, I would suspect it could be a very flat affair with neither set of players particularly interested. But if Ghana are up for it, then 11-2, when they're a vastly superior team, is a great price.
I think it's flat. The other reason it's a big game is because there's so many Ghanaians in London, and it's a really big occasion to have them playing at Wembley.
Incredibly,
there'll be a good atmosphere.
Incredibly, it's a sellout at Wembley. I think in the absence of any news, people are now... Probably all the papers are going to be saying it's a disgrace that England have sent these players home and they'll be playing a reserve side because all these fans have spent their money. But it's an England friendly. You should by now realise that it's going to be rubbish. I've been to one and I vowed never again.
What game was that, Jacob?
It was England-Hungary before the World Cup, the 2006 World Cup.
Oh, a classic fixture as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It wasn't a classic game, though.
May I move on, then?
Well, I was just going
to... Oh, no, everybody wants to talk about England now.
Well, I just wanted to say, we're really saying there are no positives. We've only said negatives.
No, we have positives.
Jacob did positives.
Yeah. Yeah, Wilshere, he's a positive. Did you hear... He said he's been watching videos of Barcelona. They're all watching videos of Barcelona.
Why
to learn how
videos
to press
Barcelona?
Videos with Fabio Capello. But that's great. I mean, just to hear an English player saying we were watching videos of a foreign team and trying to learn. I mean, that literally.
It's a new foreign team.
No, but it really is a new thing. Even in the sort of Gerrardy generation, there was this kind of feeling they can learn, they can't live without tempo, that, you know, they can learn from us. And to be saying we were learning about the physical side of football from a foreign team, I love it. It's great to hear a young.
It'd be quite hard to deny it, though, given the recent events with
England. It's been hard to deny it since 1953, but we've done a pretty good job of it, even through not qualifying for two World Cups in a row.
Yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued by the preferential treatment Capello has shown the big clubs in the Premier League by releasing their players and not players of others. Like, why is Rooney being released and not Parker?
Because Matt Jarvis got a lot more to play for the weekend probably than...
Yeah, exactly. Terry Lampard, Dawson are gone, but not Downing, Young and Bent. They all have important games at the weekend.
But so those players aren't involved in three competitions, which Rooney and people like that are going to have to play Champions League, going to have to play midweek every week, whereas Bent is going to play one game a week for the rest of the season.
Now, Barry. Ireland, Macedonia. Hey, big win.
It was a big win, particularly because Russia dropped 2 points before the game by failing to beat Armenia in Armenia. So Ireland had everything to play for. They didn't play particularly well.
Trapp says you're going to top the group.
He is very confident we're going to top the group as long as we're not blighted by injuries. And... yeah, well, if Trapp says it, it must be true.
Well, indeed. He also said, with silk you can make a tie, with cotton you can make a shirt. What do you think he means as an Ireland fan?
I don't know.
Right, okay. I'm curious.
What's he saying Ireland are, silk or cotton?
I think he's talking about a shirt, a very comfortable shirt,
but
perhaps.
Ireland has some very good players these days. I mean, isn't it quite a decent talent pool? Young players coming through?
They certainly didn't play well on Saturday. It's very nerve-wracking watching them because they can't close games out. They're not very good at holding on to leads. If they were good at holding on to leads, they'd have qualified in the last campaign at Italy's expense. They were gifted 2 goals by the Macedonian keeper, who had a shocker on Saturday, then let the Macedonians back into the game, and only took a good save from Kieran Westwood late in the second half to make sure they won. And but they hung on. But I'd say everyone in the country, with say 4 minutes to go, 2-1 up, was expecting them to have some calamitous collapse, particularly against Macedonia, because in Ireland it's famously, you know, the worst player in training each day has to wear a bib that said "I've had a Macedonia," which harks back to a previous nightmare defeat we suffered at their hands.
Is Trapattoni respected in Ireland or not?
I think everyone loves him.
Right. But respected perhaps not so much. I'm just curious why Capello is this kind of massive 6 million a year figure and Trapattoni's a bit more of a kind of comedy Italian on the side. I know that, like, sprinkling the bench with holy water.
I don't spend a huge amount of time in Ireland, so I don't really know. But I think people are frustrated by his negative tactics sometimes.
Yeah.
But I would say he's a lot more respected in Ireland than Capello is over here.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, he's an extraordinary man.
I think his English is better than Capello's. He makes more of an effort to fit in.
Right.
The other night, the camera panned to him and he was singing away to the national anthem. He probably hasn't a clue what it means or what the words are, but, you know, at least he was having a go, which is all you can ask.
Well, it certainly is.
Yeah, I think everyone is very, very fond of him. I think he has a lot of respect. But, yeah, possibly his negative defensive tactics grate on some people.
Well, certainly that kind of did for his reputation a bit in Italy, but you have to salute them. How old is he now? What, 72?
72, yeah.
And he's
been poorly recently.
Well, he was in hospital, wasn't he? Amazing career, both as a player and a manager. And I think it'd be fantastic to see him take Ireland to a major tournament.
Oh, it'd be
great. He did so well with Italy at all the competitions he went to. So there you go. You're very good. And you don't have a game. You have a game coming up midweek or not?
There's a friendly against Uruguay.
Lovely.
Tomorrow, but
resting a lot of players. No Kevin Doyle, of course. We didn't mention that.
Well, that's a tragedy for Wolves.
Mm.
He's almost certain. Looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season. And he's, you know, been arguably one of Wolves' best players. And that leaves them with Sylvain Ebanks, Blake or Stephen Fletcher to choose from. And they've kind of have similar goal scoring records this season to Doyle. Like, Ebanks Blake has scored 6 in 29, Fletcher 7 in 27. Doyle's 9 in 30.
He's just started scoring again, though, hasn't he? It's sort of come.
Well, Doyle's more of a holder merchant than anything else. I think he's not. his main function isn't to score goals. The ball's lumped his way and he's good at winning it, holding it up.
He facilitates the other forwards. All right, then. Northern Ireland, in the meantime, took the lead away to Serbia, but then lost 2-1. And they will now be playing Slovenia, who just got beat by Italy 1-0. Very good Italy performance. The paper's really excited about this.
Really?
Yeah, they were, actually. Even
it's
though
a dream
it was only
result, initially, isn't it? One.
Well, I think their point was that the man of the match, they felt, was Alberto Aquilani, who, along with Motta, really bossed the midfield. And they said that's usually the area where Italian teams suffer in international tournament. They surrender the midfield to the opposition and basically defend and try and hit teams on the break. And usually the man of the match, either the keeper or, you know, some counter-attacking player. So the fact that it was basically a kind of a midfield general, a distributor, suggests that Prandelli's new tactics of actually trying to impose their own game, of maintaining possession, all that kind of thing, seem to be working. And
are they going to start building a team around the likes of Aquilani? I mean, I remember, you know, the Euros 2008, he really was considered the kind of coming man.
Well, there's been a lot of those. Montolivo was another one who kind of fizzled a bit in the game. I'm sure Prandelli thinks that he wants to do exactly that with Motta and Aquilani. Of course, they've got De Rossi coming back into the picture. De Rossi and Balotelli left out this time around. Poor Mario getting sufficiently bored at the training ground this weekend that he...
throwing darts outside a first floor window.
We're laughing, but
it wasn't a work experience, a kid that he was throwing it at.
Yeah.
And at least it was only darts.
Right.
Rather than some
given
people.
The choice, I think I'd rather have somebody fire a low-powered BB gun at me than throw a dart out of a first
floor
window.
I had a dart thrown at me in my leg.
Did it hit you?
Yeah, it stuck in my leg.
Yeah.
Was it Mario Balotelli?
No. It was a friend of mine.
Still a friend of yours, or?
Yeah.
It does say he was throwing them in the direction of... Was this he actually throwing a dart at you?
Yeah, maybe it's been blown out of all proportion by a story-starved media.
Well, he just said he was bored, so...
Right.
You can't really argue with that, can you?
No, you can't.
How does it hurt having a dart in your leg?
Not as much as you think.
Maybe he hit an acupuncture point completely by chance.
Well, he did hit a quite fleshy part of my leg.
All right.
So
your bad back disappeared after that.
Yeah, and I no longer had a desire to smoke.
No longer impotent. I'm not basing that on anything. That was just a joke.
Good.
It's all right.
Now, no one's mentioned about Thiago Motta actually being Brazilian.
Yeah.
Which he is.
Well, I was watching this game with half an eye on it, and he scored.
Yeah.
I turned around and looked at the screen, and suddenly Thiago Motta was Italian out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. It took quite a long process. But both sets of grandparents are Italian. And he was eligible, and FIFA gave him dispensation because he had turned out for Brazil in the Gold Cup years ago.
Yeah, because I'd always heard him referred to as the Brazilian Thiago Motta.
Yeah, well, he is, in the same way that Marco Senna is Brazilian, and about a billion other Brazilians are Brazilian. But
So what's been the reaction?
Well, I keep reading about this. They're called New Italians, which in a country which is seeing, you know, vast numbers of people enter its borders and become assimilated is a wide phenomenon, much broader than, you know, the national football team. But it's not something that's come out of the blue. There's always been this kind of thing in Italy, all the way. I think the first one was back in the 1920s.
Yeah, the Argentinians.
Even a Scotsman.
Is that right?
Oh, loads of Scots.
Italy won two World Cups with a team full of Argentinians.
Yeah. And, there were Scots, you've had Brazilians, Altafini and Savori, all sorts of players. Happens. I mean, you could say that the same thing has happened in England as well. And, again, I'll say having an Italian manager for me is a bit,
It shouldn't be allowed, I think.
Well, you're blurring the boundaries.
It's not
there.
It's international football, is it?
Keep talking.
Why?
What else about...
About what?
Sorry, we start entering deep waters.
Why?
Well, I went to this event over the weekend where people were giving away trees.
Oh.
And it was kind of really nice, free trees. And then I sort of started talking, it's really nice you're giving away these free trees. And they said, yeah, they're indigenous trees, they're British trees, because there's so many trees here that aren't actually from the British Isles. They're kind of interlopers, and they're kind of, you know, we want British trees because...
Are they crowding out our trees?
Yeah, they're taking our parkland, taking our birds.
Right.
And in the end, I just didn't get any trees because I thought, this is something slightly odd going. It was like sort of a skinhead tree event.
What event was it?
It was sort of in the park. It was some sort of
nothing to do with the boat race.
English Tree no. Defence League sort of thing. I don't know what it was, but they were giving away three trees. But it had all these like connotations.
And did you get one?
No.
I thought, hang on, this is a bit weird.
Right. How big were the trees they were giving away?
All sizes, you know, creepers, trees, bushes, right. climbers. But they were British trees for British people and British right. gardens.
There's nothing for you here.
Were only British people allowed to buy them? Or?
Well, they did. They insisted on having an address as well.
What kind of squirrels would live in these trees?
Yeah, good point.
That's another question.
British squirrels.
Yeah. Good luck finding those, Barney.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's talk about more international football. Netherlands, they're looking terrific, aren't they? Big win against Hungary, 4-0, and now they're going to play Hungary. Good. They're 6 points clear in the group. Germany, a 4-0 win over Kazakhstan. They're doing well. France, they played Luxembourg, won 2-0. There were boos, Jacob. Boos for Evra and Ribery, is that right?
They were, yeah, from the 2,000 travelling France fans.
And they booed them because of that nasty business at the World Cup?
Yeah.
I think that's good, isn't it? Isn't it? Do I think it's good? I'm not sure.
Do you think it's good?
I'm not sure. Why? It sounds good, I think.
Booing?
Yeah.
Your own players?
Well, what they did was wrong. They can't just walk back in, can they?
Do you think they care?
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't like to be booed.
I don't know. It's that bad. When push comes to shove, you know, right. I'm sure when Frank Ribery goes back to his enormous house and surveys his big, you know, shed full of money out the back. I'm not going to say it, and don't worry. that, you know, he'd get over it fairly quick. I suppose it depends on who you're being booed by.
That's
if you're
true.
Being booed by people you respect, yeah. then that will be unpleasant. If you're being booed by sort of the average knuckle-dragging football fan who enjoys booing things for not much reason, then, you know, who cares what they think.
Okay. And, well, there you go. And let's see, Greece beat Malta to go ahead of Group F. Yes, they did. Yep. But we don't have time, Barry, to talk about that. Norway, a 1-1 draw with Denmark. Did you see Dennis Romadal's goal?
Yeah, I did. We watched it together, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah. It was a special moment.
It was very special. It's quite a good paint a picture.
Well, it was a header out from a corner, wasn't it?
Yeah, loads of headers, I think.
Yeah, head tennis and came out about 30 yards out and on his left foot smacked it in on the volley.
Ooh,
top corner.
Lovely. Lovely shot. He calls it the best goal of his career, and I think most Charlton fans are probably not have difficulty believing that. Good. A lot of controversy after the game at the Emirates. Mm. Not all of it about Neymar's haircut.
There was a story that Scotland fans had thrown a banana
right.
onto the pitch and that this was a kind of racial banana.
If it's true, it's really sad, because you were saying, Barney, there's always been a terrific relationship between the two.
There has been. Scotland and Brazil, it's one of the sort of great footballing friendships, and Scottish fans generally, you know, love watching Brazil. I can't imagine the vast majority of them would have gone to that game thinking, God, those Brazilians, you know, I hate them for racial reasons. And plus, of course, you know, it was a Scot who first introduced or pioneered football in Brazil in the first place. Well, Charles Miller had
a fact that was present in every Scottish fan's mind as they watch this game. I'm sure.
But it's part of the relationship. I'm sure of it. I mean, Scottish railway engineers were a part of football being established in Brazil. If you go to the São Paulo Athletic Club, which is still a kind of hub of sport in Brazil, there's pictures of Scottish railway engineers on the wall. I mean, it's a very warm footballing friendship, and it would be very sad if this is true.
Certainly would. Terrific goal from Neymar, though.
Yeah, it was a fantastic goal. I've said it again. I said before the pod I wasn't going to say fantastic.
No, I think it's good. Run with it, Jake.
Yeah, it's my new catchphrase.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, it's better than rubbish.
Or caveat.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was great. See, I've used another adjective there.
Yeah.
A new one.
How's that working out for you?
I prefer fantastic.
Right. Sorry, Barry.
No, I was just going to say, like, even if one Scottish fan did throw a banana on the pitch and it was a racially motivated throw of fruit, that doesn't mean Scottish fans are racist, surely. Although
one person is racist.
We did get a disturbing email this morning from a reader who's saying he was on the Northern Line on the tube yesterday before the game, and a group of Scottish supporters were singing racially abusive songs. I was in the office yesterday on my way home. I made the mistake of sitting beside an incredibly large, drunk man in a kilt and a Scottish replica shirt, and he smelled really bad as well. But he wasn't racially abusive, just generally abusive,
right,
and incredibly annoying. He seemed to have enjoyed himself anyway.
Well, lots of other international football played this weekend, including Spain's come-from-behind victory over the Czech Republic. We'll be hearing about that and much more now from Sid Lowe. Now, the sound of cleats on a tunnel floor on the way out of a dressing room means that we must be joined by Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid.
Hello, James. How are you?
Hi, Sid. What's going on there?
I'm just about to play football, and there's a big queue of us walking out of dressing rooms now.
Oh, right. You're literally on your way to the pitch.
I'm literally on my way to the pitch, yes.
All right, this is
like... You'll hear the click-clack of studs on concrete.
All right, which pitch?
I think it's pitch 4, I'm not sure.
Oh, all right, it's not like in a big stadium or something?
Well, nearly. It's pitch 4 at Valdebebas, Real Madrid's training ground.
Oh, nice one. And what are you doing... Sorry, that's Barry whistling in the background. What are you doing there at Real Madrid's training ground?
Well, playing football.
Yeah, but do they just regularly let any old so-and-so come along?
Yeah, any old...
Really?
Well, I think today, Jose Mourinho's had this thing recently about hypocrites. He's been talking lots about how people are hypocrites. I think today he's about to find out just what a big bunch of hypocrites we are, criticising Real Madrid. He's about to see us play, and he's about to realise just how rubbish we are and what a bunch of horrible hypocrites.
So you're turning out for some kind of Journo 11 under the in the guiding hands of Mourinho? Is he in some way involved in this?
Against Mourinho. That's the most frightening thing about it.
You're about to play Jose Mourinho?
Well, I don't know if he's playing or not, but we're playing some sort of staff team. I don't know anything about it. I imagine he won't play. I'd be very, very surprised if he does.
All right.
It'd be pretty good fun if he does, though, wouldn't it?
It'd be excellent fun, Sid. It'd be excellent. I bet he wanted to play, but then turned it down at the last minute because he decided he had a better offer somewhere else, he said in the top.
No, it's because he knew he was going to lose to us, James.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. You'll have to tell us later, on Thursday or whatever, if there was anybody famous in the team you're playing. And well done for making the cut. I did want to ask a couple... Yeah, quite. I did want to ask...
That was motivational. That was a guy called Alberto Pereira. Motivational shout for us.
Right. I did want to ask, if I might, Spain got their win, etc., David Villa.
Yeah, they did. They struggled a little bit for it. They were a goal down at half time. They were a little slow, I thought, a little flat. I mean, they played reasonably well. They created far more chances than Czech Republic, but it wasn't anywhere near as fluid as they would normally like it to be. In the second half, they took off one of their central midfielders, and this is still a bone of contention despite the World Cup winning success as to whether or not they need two deep lying midfielders. Do they really need Sergio Busquets and Xavi Alonso? Well, Del Bosco decided at half time that no, indeed, he didn't. Sent on Fernando Torres, who personally played very badly, but we'll go back to that argument I had ages ago, I think, with you on the pod about how Fernando Torres almost plays an Emil Heskey role, because while he doesn't necessarily himself do very much, actually David Villa looks happier with him. And then Villa scored the two goals, which of course are two historic goals, because it takes him to 46 for the Spanish national team. 46 in 72 games is pretty bloody good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like that, almost as good a record as that Brazilian goalie. But we'll get back onto that in a little bit later on. Sid, some other big stories hanging over from our last pod when you were talking to us about the trip to Granada and the strike. Did you get the mug, first of all?
Oh, it's a tragedy. I went into the club shop. They had pens and rulers and notebooks. They even had little baby booties and kits and stuff, but no mugs. And I said to the woman, have you got any mugs? And she sort of looked at me like I was mad. I said, you know, those ceramic things that you put coffee and stuff in. She looked at me like I'd asked her to do some sort of, you know, really horrible act. She said, no. So I went into the stadium, and of course, as you can imagine, I was pointing out that Granada was rubbish because they had no mugs. And someone sent me a photograph of the Granada club shop with mugs in it. So I was furious.
So I
think they must have sold them.
Oh, right.
But wow. Someone did very kindly send me a link with a picture of a Granada mug. Unfortunately, it was a Ford Granada mug.
But anyway, do tell us about the strike. Any news, Sid?
Well, there's a judge's decision tomorrow, and I suspect the judge's decision will show that the strike can't go ahead. I then think what will probably happen is there'll be more frets, and the frets will now come ahead of next season rather than for this round of games. Legally speaking, this isn't strictly speaking a strike. A strike involves a workers' walkout. This isn't a strike. This is the owners, the clubs, the businesses deciding that they're not going to go. In other words, it's not a strike. It's a lockout. And legally, now I really hope I haven't got this wrong because obviously I'm not a lawyer, but legally, as my understanding of it, is that lockouts are not legal in Spain. Huh? And therefore, I think the judge will say, no, you can't play. No, you can't go on strike.
Well, you
so hopefully this weekend's games will be okay. Yeah. But we're still in a situation which is Monday. Games will start on Saturday and we don't know.
Sid, are you warming up as you speak?
Well, I'm trying to, yeah. I'm jogging around, kicking the occasional ball. I'm absolutely amazed, James. I'm delighted because they've actually put us on one of the grass pitches here rather than one of the AstroTurf ones. I haven't played on grass in years.
All right. What position are you going to be playing, Sid?
I don't honestly know.
Okay.
Probably on the bench.
Anybody we know? Can you see Jose there warming up for the Real Madrid team? Is there anybody we know?
Hang on, I'm looking around. James, I think he's playing in goal.
Really?
I'm looking across the pitch. I believe that's him putting his glove.
Walk over that way. Just jog. Do your training jog over there.
I've got to pick up my bib first. Yeah, he is, yeah.
Wow, Jose.
And former First Division referee is playing as well, although maybe he's refereeing. That'd be much more fun.
Right. Okay.
Do you think I'll get sent off if I call him things?
Who? The referee?
The referee, yeah.
Well, hopefully so, yeah. those being the rules, Sid, I'm not entirely sure. But this is a terrific occasion for us to... Can you just keep the phone by your ear as you go through the first half?
Yeah, I could try and do that, although I might not be that good with only one arm.
Right.
I won't be that good with both arms either, or indeed both legs.
Better luck putting on your bib than Mario Balotelli.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out which end do I put this thing on. So the hole at the top's bigger than the other two, actually, but there we go. Right, I'm just putting it on now. Wait a minute. There we go, it's on.
Did anyone time
radio,
that?
Well, radio podding, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Sid, listen, we better let you get on with that. Do let us know, and best of luck in the game, and do let us know how it all turns out.
Will do. Thanks, James. Take care.
Thanks, Sid.
Bye.
I just feel we've lost the news there.
Amazing, yeah.
Our correspondent was live on a football pitch with Jose Mourinho.
And we didn't tell him to go over and ask him some questions about his comments about Fabio Capello this morning.
Our news desk will not be pleased.
No.
I can't believe it.
Mourinho's dad was a goalie, wasn't he?
Oh, right. Mm. There you go, eh? Another brush with greatness.
Barney can actually top being on the same football pitch as Jose Mourinho because he was in a boat with Barry Davis.
Barry Davis.
No, commentator. At his face. Look at his face.
Yeah, no, I know who he is, but I'm not sure if that tops being on a football pitch with Mourinho.
You don't think that Barry's being entirely serious about that?
I mean,
it was an exciting moment. I mean, yep. Barry, obviously, just because he's really a personal hero. I still think the best commentator as well. I'd love to see him back. But it's just a bit odd sitting in a boat with him and him not saying anything. I kept really wanting him to describe what was happening.
Why were you in a boat with him?
It was just a little launch on the Thames to do with the infernal, rubbish, terrible boat race.
Right.
Which I was vaguely, peripherally involved with.
Okay, because you were covering it for The Guardian.
Yeah, that's another way of describing it.
Yeah, good. We'll be catching up with James Dart very shortly, having more Dart fun than a training afternoon with Mario Balotelli after this. Now, joining us in the pod is James Dart. James, you missed out on so much already, but just briefly to recap, Jacob quite liked England's performance. Wales got roundly slammed. Lots of other nations are doing even better. English trees are threatened by foreign invaders. Mm. I think that's about it, actually. Let's talk about some other big issues then. Brighton, for example, in League One.
Running away with the League One, as they continue to do so. A seventh consecutive win at the weekend, beating Swindon 2-1. I think 10 wins in 11 games now.
Oof.
10 points clear, and they probably need, mathematically, they need 10 more points, I believe, that will guarantee them promotion, but they won't probably not even need that as things stand. So they're looking rather prettily set.
How well could they do in the Championship as they are?
I think, given the teams that came into the Championship this season, you think that they could probably fit in quite smoothly, I would say. They're going to be playing in the new Falmer Stadium down in Brighton.
It looks beautiful, doesn't it?
It does. and it'll be a great home for them to sort of kick on into from where they've been at the Withy, my goodness, for these years. It's going to be a pleasant experience for both them and all away supporters as well.
Yeah, that's one thing about it, that they actually seem to be targeting making it a comfortable experience for visiting players and supporters.
Well, hopefully not too comfortable, I imagine, from a Brighton perspective next season. But yeah, I think there's a fair chance that they could easily get into sort of mid-table, if not higher.
What are they doing to make it comfortable for visiting supporters?
Somehow the walls are going to be... they're going to have screens. You know those electronic kind of pictures that flash out? So they're going to make...
Televisions.
Yeah, that's the word. No, you know those kind of photo for it, where they're going to have basically the ambience, the decoration is going to be themed to whatever the visiting... It's not just going to reflect Brighton, but also the visiting team. And I think also the dressing rooms as well will have the colours of the visiting team.
Well, that's very nice. I mean, you remember when Brighton were having all their problems, they got a lot of support from other teams in the league. There was a fans' day where everybody, all supporters from all around the country, came down. I mean, it's really nice to see that sort of paid back a bit.
Amongst all the fuss about Brighton at the moment, people are saying, oh, there's no reason they shouldn't have a potentially as big a fan base as, say, Portsmouth or Southampton. Is that true, though?
Well, I think that there's an argument you could say that in terms of the geographical size of the area around there. I mean, they haven't got a huge amount of competition in the near vicinity, so, I mean, they could justifiably have that. It isn't as big a place quite as, say, Southampton and Portsmouth, but they're going to very possibly be above them both very soon.
Yeah.
They're already above one of them.
So, well, there you go. That's Brighton then. Huddersfield are in second place. They beat Paul Ince is Notts County 3-0 over the weekend. Paul Ince is Notts County all the way down in 18th place in League One.
They are, but they should be safe. The bottom four look pretty... Well, they're not cut adrift, but they're in a fair bit of trouble. You've got Plymouth, Swindon, Bristol Rovers and Walsall, even though Walsall held MK Dons, who are up into the playoff positions now.
Yeah.
The four of them are at bottom four, and they've all played at least two games more than all the teams above them, so they've got around sort of seven or eight games to save themselves, and it's looking pretty tough, especially because the likes of Yeovil, who were in there, went to Leighton Orient at the weekend and won 5-1 against the previously, until the week or so previous, the fantastic run that Leighton Orient had been on.
Yeah.
So that was probably arguably the result of the weekend in League One.
Can I just say on MK Dons, it's a massive few weeks for that whole sort of project, because they really do need to get promotion, and they've geared, the season is totally geared towards it. This is like a really crucial stage in...
You mean financially if they don't get...
Yeah, financially in terms of, attracting more fans, which they desperately need. And they've invested in this young manager. They really need to get promotion this year. And if it fails, you never know, the whole thing might fail.
Huh?
Lots of people would be very pleased.
This is true. This is true. In League Two, anything else you want to say about League One?
League One, that was probably there.
Probably it.
League Two, you've got Chesterfield, top of the pops, as it were. Drew Tool at Barnet, threw away a 2-goal lead, gave away a quite a comedic sort of injury time equaliser. Barnett scored direct from out by the corner flag. Goalkeeping mishap, but they're cruising towards promotion as well. Wickham and Bury look pretty strong. Stevenage are making quite an impressive late surge for an automatic berth. They're up to fourth, 5 wins in a row, and they've sort of languished around sort of mid-table, quite under the radar throughout the season, and then they've just really put on a huge spurt in the last coming weeks.
Burton Albion, why have they got 4 games in hand?
They had a... Due to a huge run of sort of... there was a mixture of League Cup and bad weather. So they're still down in amongst it, and they obviously lost again yesterday. But they should have enough games in hand, and the teams below them are still bad enough that even though Stockport did get a late winner at the weekend, it's going to be unlikely to see them both.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Now, anything else today? We wanted to talk about two things. One was goal-scoring keepers. This after Rodrigo scored the 100th goal of his career, despite being the Sao Paulo goalkeeper. That's pretty amazing. Hey, Barney.
It is amazing. He's played 950 games, so it's a goal just under every 10 games, which isn't far away from Emil Heskey's strike rate with England.
Is it not as good as Emil Heskey? It might be better.
I think Heskey got 7 in 62, so it's
okay. Almost as good.
Both did a lot of all their best work away from the penalty area,
right?
Of course. Yeah, it's an amazing record because he's actually a good goalie as well. I mean, he was in the 2002 World Cup squad, and he's played one World Club Championships. He's also just very good at belting in free kicks and penalties.
Mm-hmm. How was the free kick?
On a left position, and he curled it in, right-footed into the top corner, like David Beckham. It was just like...
Right. All Chile there,
and,
of course.
And he got booked for taking off his shirt in celebration.
Referee. Yeah. Chile, because you mentioned that that's traditionally the way that goalkeepers score from a spot kick, either free kick like Chile or Rodrigo or Hand Jorg Butt. I probably said that wrong, but in quite an exciting way. Who takes penalties, of course, the German fella. Also, was it Ricardo who... I think the Portuguese keeper, yeah, Ricardo used to take...
Except against England.
He certainly did in 2004, didn't he? Woof. Yeah. And then went straight back in goals and saved the next one, didn't he?
Without any gloves on. I mean, that's amazing. What an afternoon he had. Whatever happened to Ricardo after that? I thought he was...
Played one more, I think. Well, no, a couple more tournaments for Portugal.
But on the subject of goal-scoring keepers, it only really gets exciting when it's when they score in open play. Like
Peter
the way
Schmeichel did.
There you go.
Rota Volograd, against... Not for Rota Volograd, against them in 95. A header from a corner.
Right. Goalkeeping header. Yeah. Michelangelo Rampulla. There we go.
Jimmy Glass scored that famous goal for Carlisle that kept them in the league. They were about to drop out of the league, and he scored an injury time winner from the corner. And do you not remember that?
Nope.
Carlisle.
And he's now going... Jimmy Glass, right, who most people, apart from you, will remember, for famously scoring a goal in open play, very late winner that kept Carlisle in the league.
Yep.
Is married to the woman who Richard Keys was talking about when he was talking about Jamie Redknapp smashing things.
Really?
Yep.
And now she's married to a man named Glass.
And she's called Mrs. Glass.
Yes.
That's ironic. In a very real sense.
I'm on top of all the...
You certainly are.
There was another good one as well. Brad Friedel scoring in the last minute for Blackburn against Charlton in 2003.
All right.
It was the equaliser. They got it back from 2-0 down.
All right.
And Charlton went straight up the other end and scored. And they focused on his face, just crumpled.
Even more than...
Just look at his face. Just look at his face.
Right. Getting it back on.
Paul Robinson as well. Lovely header.
He also scored from his own area.
Yeah, that was against Ben Foster. The one you mean?
No, he scored with a header for Leeds as well, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, goal-scoring keepers, eh? It's a rich vein of discussion. Mm. It's a sort of goalkeeping trivia question that might come up in a popular sports quiz. For example, the Opta-Joe sports quiz, Barry, which took place last week.
It did, and Guardian Sport entered a team. Jacob was on it alongside James Dart.
Yes.
I think we'd...
Jonathan Wilson was there as well.
Yes, we had two rain men there, Jonathan Wilson and Rob Smythe.
Yep.
And Scott Murray was there.
Scott Murray.
And John Ashton.
What a team.
Yeah.
So you're saying this was a team composed of John Ashton, Scott Murray, Jonathan Wilson.
Rob Smythe.
Jacob Steinberg. And James
Jacob,
Dart. Great for making the cut on that. You must have been quite thrilled.
It was a big, big evening.
Right.
Yeah.
How many teams took part?
16. Yeah. And we finished third behind Sky Sports and ESPN.
Are you happy with that, Jacob?
We were 5 points behind them. We had a really bad first round. It was a very...
What happened in the first round?
I don't know. It was sort of questions where you really sort of... A lot of them we had to guess. It was, you know, who has the most red cards.
ESPN and Sky clearly didn't have to guess.
Well, I think that's kind of more their domain, you know, who has the most red cards in Premier League history.
Right.
And there was no way
to be able to answer that question without having to refer to a reference book.
But he didn't. But he had a few pints by then.
Is it true that fights and ill-tempered exchanges broke out at the final whistle?
Yes.
Right.
You had a
set-to with Gabriele Marcotti, didn't you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What about?
We got in. Well, he came over early on before the quiz started and whispered, not too quietly, in Jonathan Wilson's ear, "Where are the real Guardian people?" Which was sort of our team talk done.
You just put that on the wall, that's all you needed.
Yeah. And then he got really annoyed when me and Rob went to the toilet because he thought we were cheating.
Right.
And so...
When in fact you were about doing cocaine or getting intimate with each other or something?
Both.
All right.
Both. Okay.
We had a disagreement about football.
About football?
Yeah.
So, all right. So, just to sum up then, a very credible third place. We're on the podium, blah, blah, blah.
Champions League.
Champions League. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations to the teams that did win.
Yeah, well done. It was a great night, though. The quiz is online, though. If anyone
really?
Wants, yeah, if anyone wants to try it on Opta's website.
Okay. And what score did Guardian get to see if anyone
we
can beat them?
We got 81.
Right, okay, well, there you go.
But
so you go to Opta's
Marcotti.
Website.
We beat Marcotti.
For all his big talk and his...
Yeah,
his
we beat Marcotti.
Who else did you beat? BBC?
No, they weren't there. Talk Sport.
Jackie Magazine?
Who?
No. One from the past, sorry.
ITV, we beat.
Yeah.
The Mail.
Right.
So, you know.
All right.
And we beat the bloggers.
There was a bloggers team as well. All right.
That's impossible because they know everything.
Ooh. Ooh. Now, anyway, that is, amazingly enough, all we've got time for today. So many thanks for joining us, Barry Glendenning, Jacob Steinberg, Barney Roney, and producer Ben, back at the controls. We will be returning on Thursday with all sorts of exciting news about those midweek internationals and, yes, the return of league football at the weekend. So do join us for that. For now, though, from all of us here, it is goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.